Greetings once again from Denver, Colorado, the city right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. So glad to have you on the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought, and we'll jump right into the news. No, let's not jump right into the news. First, I have a special request from several listeners. I referred to a video that was produced by someone, some unknown person. It contained my impersonation of one Joel Osteen as he prayed over the lesbian mayor there in Houston. And by golly, I cannot find the video. Someone sent it to me. I watched it. I had a link to it. Now you search YouTube for McBurney or anything else, all you get is, when you search for McBurney, there's apparently a, what's that type of fighting called? IFC? I don't know, the fighting where they don't have any gloves and they kick each other and punch each other. K-1, yeah. Anyway, that kind of fighting, there's one of those guys named Joe McBurney. He's apparently a lot more popular than I am. So it's hard. If anyone out there knows who produced the video or how I can get a link to the video of the Joel Osteen lesbian mayor prayer, please send me the link at doug@theweeklyworldview.com so I can send it to the many millions of viewers and listeners who've been begging me for it for the past week, because I simply can't find it. So Saturday morning, I wake up at 10 o'clock, and then I have breakfast with my family, and then I went back to sleep until 3 o'clock, because it was an intense week. Getting the personhood petition, all the signatures gathered, we turned in 79,917 signatures, rounded off 80,000 signatures, to the Secretary of State in order to put the most significant social question of our time, of our generation, on the ballot in Colorado in an attempt to end the dehumanization and murder of an entire class of human being. Not to put too fine a point on it, but it is a significant movement, and we have won a victory here in Colorado. Just getting it on the ballot is a victory. But boy, it's a lot of hard work, and I had to catch up on some sleep. So I got a little bit behind on the news, but I hope you will forgive me for that. But there is plenty here. Plenty in the chute here as we dive in to this week's episode of The Weekly Worldview. From CNSNews.com, airport body scanners are upsetting Muslims. That's right. A group of Muslim scholars, they're the Fiqh Council, the Fiqh Council of North America, which is a group of Muslim scholars. They say that general and public use of airport scanners is against the teaching of Islam, natural law, and all religions and cultures that stand for decency and modesty. Yeah. You can find it. It's posted. Their report is posted on at a website called Islam Online. And I happen to agree with the Muslims in this particular case. This whole body scanner, nude body scanner thing is, well, it's disgusting, frankly. I mean, I'm just not going to go into it. Anyway, the Islamic clerics say it is a violation of clear Islamic teachings that men or women to be seen naked by other men and women. This should not be. The group noted that Islam emphasizes modesty, considering it part of the faith. They say while exceptions can be made to the modesty clause in Islam, in cases of extreme necessity, their report indicated that passenger body scans do not rise to that level. So the Muslim clerics feel that to prevent Muslims from blowing planes out of the sky, that does not rise to the level of extreme necessity. And, well, I happen to agree with them, on the, at least on the body scanner side of things. As far as the extreme necessity of preventing planes from being blown out of the sky, I think it is an extreme necessity. This is a case of extreme necessity. But I'm not for body scanning men and women by other men and women, because it's just, well, it's just not right. Gives me the creeps, frankly, to think about it. These Muslims are asking for changes in scanner software so that the machines will produce only body outlines. And in the meantime, the group says Muslim travelers should choose pat-down searches over scanner images, wherever that's necessary. Now, I'm not sure a pat-down fits in with the modesty of Islam. I'm not sure how the pat-down fits into all that. I would think the pat-down would be pretty offensive as well. But I love how the Muslim religion is good at making exceptions in cases of extreme necessity. Like, you know, if it's necessary to kill the infidel wherever he dwells in order to advance the cause of Islam, they're willing to make exceptions to their general rule against killing innocent civilians. They're willing to make exceptions. If it's necessary to blow up a mosque and kill fellow Muslims in order to advance the holy cause of Allah, well, then we'll make an exception. Anyway, so wherever I agree with the Muslims, I like to point that out. And I agree that body scanning is disgusting, and it simply should be frowned upon. And if you want to know my view and my solution for preventing planes from being blown out of the sky by Muslim extremists, well, you'll go back, listen to a few shows. It involves eliminating terrorists and the civilians who harbor them with extreme prejudice. All right, now we'll move on deeper into the religion file. From Tyler, Texas, in the Associated Press, a spate of recent fires that destroyed or damaged several churches in eastern Texas were intentionally set by the same person or group, according to none other than the U.S. Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. Yes, they're heading an investigation into the burning of churches, and the ATF is an expert in the burning of churches and in the killing of Christians with strange and unusual theological beliefs. If anyone's going to uncover whether or not a church was burned on purpose, it'll be the ATF, because they are the experts. Anyway, since January 1st, 8 churches have been set ablaze deliberately there in East Texas. And investigators now say they are seeking 3 men, persons of interest. Yes, the persons of interest, 2 of them are short-haired, one with a flame-like tattoo on his neck, the other with an inverted cross on his left forearm and elbow, a third man with longer hair, and apparently no distinguishing tattoos. So we know that the church arson attack there in East Texas is not Muslim fundamentalists. No, certainly not. It's the much more dangerous humanist, secularist, evolutionist public school scum that have matriculated up through the public schools and have graduated into lives of crime and degeneracy. That's what we're looking for there in East Texas. Not looking for Muslims. We're looking for your average white punk high school graduate. They're burning churches in East Texas. And I hope when they're discovered, they are eliminated with extreme prejudice. Now, let's move on deeper into the religion file. The religion file is thick this week. The First Lady of the United States, one Michelle Barack Hussein Obama, she said at a ceremony at the White House last Tuesday, she's announcing the launch of her Let's Move campaign to end childhood obesity in the United States. She says it's an epidemic. She says it's costly. And she says it's a threat to national security. That's right. Why? Why would it be a threat to national security? Because the kids are getting so fat that we can't get a picture of them on those body scanners? You have to take 2 pictures to get some of these fifth graders? Is that what she's saying? No. She says obesity is now one of the most common disqualifiers for military service. And therefore, childhood obesity is a threat to national security. That's an interesting connection for Ms. Obama to make. But, hey, she's the one. Didn't she graduate from Princeton or or some other such Ivy League prestigious university. So she's a lot smarter than a fellow like me, so I'll assume that she knows what she's talking about. She says, this isn't like a disease where we're still waiting for a cure to be discovered, talking about obesity. She says, this isn't like putting a man on the moon or inventing the internet. It doesn't take some stroke of genius or a feat of technology. We have everything we need right now to help our kids lead healthy lives. That's according to the First Lady of the United States, an advocate of the secular culture that is destroying a lot more than children's, their health, their physical health. But speaking of First Ladies, here's an interesting tale from WorldNet Daily. Hillary Rodham Clinton is being challenged in her position as the Secretary of State. Her eligibility is being challenged. That's right. Now, if you listen to the show, you know that I'm not a real strong birther. I'm not real big on the idea that we can catch Obama and have him kicked out of office because he was born in Nigeria or Kenya or Indonesia or he's a closet Muslim or all that stuff. I think it's fun to talk about, and I'll poke fun at our first Kenyan president, but I'm not a big birther. But here we have Hillary's eligibility being questioned. Now, this has nothing to do with where she was born or who her father was or whether she's a man or a woman in reality. Has nothing to do with any of that. Judicial Watch has filed a brief with the U.S. Supreme Court, and it outlines how during Clinton's tenure in U.S. Senate, the salary for the Secretary of State was raised from about $186,000 to about $196,000, about 10 grand a year raise, and then she took that office. So she voted on the raises and then took that office. Now, the complaint challenges whether a resolution that was adopted by Congress right before she took office to roll back the compensation for that office to the level of January 2007, well, would actually remove the obstacle to Clinton's appointment. Now, the U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 6, Clause 2, reads, "No senator or representative shall, during the time for which he was elected, be appointed to any civil office under the authority of the United States, which shall have been created, or the emoluments whereof shall have been increased during such time." So it basically says, nobody can sit in the Senate, create a job, and then give or give raises to that job, and then take that job. Makes sense, right? An inherent conflict of interest. Well, Hillary Clinton did just that. She sat in the Senate, voted on three pay raises, and then took the office. Now, the case was brought on behalf of a foreign service officer who says that, he says the compensation and other emoluments of the office of Secretary of State rose during Clinton's tenure in the Senate. Now, a special three-judge panel had previously dismissed the case, concluding that the complainant lacked standing. So do you get that? The three-judge panel, they dismissed the case not based on the fact that Congress's shuck and jive over the pay raises was actually enough to supersede the clear wording of the Constitution. They simply said that this low-level government functionary employee didn't have the standing to take the Secretary of State to court. So Judicial Watch is going to take the case to the Supreme Court, and we will see if Hillary Rodham Clinton will be sent back to Kenya. I mean, Arkansas. No, she's from Chicago too, right? She'll have to go back to Chicago, perhaps, and where she'll be appointed to some low-level functionary position to which she is properly attuned, perhaps as a community organizer there in Chicago. All right, now, comments from recent broadcasts. These are comments that were posted that I haven't had a chance to get to because, well, I've been working many, many hours, more than I ought to, on the personhood campaign, and so I've neglected getting to many of these comments. From Jason K. to the Weekly Worldview, here we go. He says, "Doug, I'm moving to Moscow." Wow, that's big news, Jason. Where do you live now? I mean, unless you live in Kiev right now, then maybe that's not a big deal. But, you know, I think he's an American. He says, "I hope I don't have any trouble getting your podcast there because I love your impersonations. Your Muslim and gay impersonations are the best. Also, I was surprised how well you did the Russian mayor's voice. But to do a Russian accent with a gay lisp took an incredible amount of skill and talent. Well, I really appreciate that, Jason. Now he goes on at some length to make some derogatory comments about the bumper music here at the Worldview. He talks about the bumper music. He uses the term awful about the bumper music. Says he wants something more Christian. And so let me just explain to Jason, before you get on that big old jet airliner on your way over to Moscow, one of the objects of my broadcast is to try to capture the interest of my generation, the ones that are lost and on their way to hell. And so I'm hoping by playing some music that they might have heard back in 1989 or so, I'm hoping that might help them to tune in. And also, my extremely attractive audio engineer plays whatever she wants. I have no control over the selection of the bumper music. And I think it's just fine, frankly. All right. Another comment from Alan, a Weekly Worldview listener. Hey, Doug, this article is about the difference between Muslim and Moslem. Hope you enjoy it. So the article is entitled, Why Do People Say Muslim Now Instead of Moslem? By one Yi-Ann Christine Chen, a student at the University of Washington. She says, according to the Center for Nonproliferation Studies, Muslim and Muslim are basically two different spellings for the same word. But the seemingly arbitrary choice of spellings is a sensitive subject for many followers of Islam. Whereas for most English speakers, the two words are synonymous in meaning, the Arabic roots of the two words are very different. Now here's where it gets interesting. A Muslim in Arabic means one who gives himself to Allah and is, by definition, someone who adheres to Islam. By contrast, a Muslim in Arabic means one who is evil and unjust. When the word is pronounced as it is in English, Muslim with a Z. Now that I did not know, but I suspected that it was something like that. I suspected that the modern Muslim who supports Allah and Al-Qaeda and the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade and Hezbollah, I suspected that those Muslims would be offended at me using the word Muslim, but I wasn't sure why. Now I know. Now, she does point out in the article that for others, this spelling difference is merely a linguistic matter. There are groups who still use the older form of the name, such as the American Muslim Foundation. She says they still use the word Muslim, much like the NAACP still calls itself the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. And she says also the Journal of the Muslim World, published by the Hartford Seminary in Connecticut, still calls itself the Journal of the Muslim World, despite the insistence by Muslims that we call them Muslims. And we're no longer allowed to call the Quran. We must call it the Quran. The Holy Quran, if you please. Well, for me, I mean, you say tomato, I say tomato. You say Muslim, I say Muslim. Got to be like 1984. I mean, that's going way, way back. Going way, way back. In the way back machine. Okay. Now, let us continue in the religion file. Have we not yet gotten out of the religion file? Well, I think those comments got us out of the religion file, but we're jumping right back into the religion file. Now, I am merely an amateur when it comes to theology in the Bible, so I'll do my best with this question, but I may embarrass myself, and if I do, I would appreciate it if there are others out there who are more familiar with the scriptures than I to correct me. This is a message from Trevor, from last week. He says, "Hey, Doug, I heard you joke about the devil screwing something up on the Bob Enyart show yesterday on the radio. I was guest hosting a good portion of the week there on local radio here in Denver. Anyway, he says, you joked about the devil screwing something up, so you obviously don't believe the devil still has any power to do anything here on Earth, or at least that's the way it came across." So he says, "Doug, with that in mind, I came across this verse from Paul. 1 Thessalonians 2:18, Paul says, quote, 'We wanted to come to you, even I, Paul, time and time again, but Satan hindered us.' So, Doug, here you have the great apostle attributing some of the things that happened to them to the devil. So why joke about it? Surely not everything can be blamed on the devil. I agree with that. But to come across as to say that he doesn't do anything anymore, how do you build a case for that?" Okay. Well, the first way is that I've never seen any credible evidence of the devil doing anything. That's the first thing, and I know that that doesn't count for much because that's just anecdotal and it's my own little envelope of world experience, but I've never seen any credible evidence of the devil doing anything, or a demon, as a matter of fact, doing anything. By the way, I've also never seen any credible evidence of God or Jesus healing anyone either. I've just never seen it myself, okay? So that's the first thing that makes me lean in that direction. But let's talk about the scripture. Now this 1 Thessalonians quote, Paul says the devil, Satan hindered us. I think it's just a figure of speech. And there's a lot of figures of speech like this in the Bible from Jesus himself in Matthew 16:23. He said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan." Now he didn't mean that Peter had literally transformed into Satan. He was using Satan as a figure to exemplify evil. Again, 1 Corinthians 5:5, Paul says, deliver a brother who's sinning in the church. He says, deliver such a one to Satan. Now, he doesn't mean literally like, I mean, kill the guy and send him to hell or I don't know, sacrifice him on some satanic altar. He just means, you know, let him go his way to wickedness and you know, Lord willing, he'll repent and return. And there are a number of other figures. A few from Paul, you got 1 Corinthians 7:5, 2 Corinthians 12:17, 1 Timothy 1:20, just to name a few. And then also, I believe, and I couldn't find enough of this to make myself comfortable, but I believe that since Christ's resurrection, I believe Satan is constrained. I believe his power is restrained, perhaps significantly, perhaps completely. Perhaps Satan has no real-time influence on the planet today or any events. And I you know, go to John 12:31, go to 2 Thessalonians 2:7. And maybe there's some other people in the audience who know more who could help me. But to say Satan has no influence at all would be remiss. Because even if Satan has been restrained for 2,000 years, there's a legacy of his influence in that people have followed him and worshipped him in various ways, primarily through worship of themselves and placing themselves in the place of God, which is exactly what Satan did. So he has a legacy of influence that still corrupts the world today. But I don't think he has day-to-day influence or any real-time influence, although there may be some spiritual things that I don't understand. There's definitely a spiritual realm that I don't fully comprehend, and Satan may have some influence in that spiritual realm, but certainly not in the physical realm. And so there. Trevor, that's the best I can do for the moment, but I very much appreciate the fact that you're a thinking fellow and that you take the scripture seriously and that you're listening to the worldview. And I'd be happy to debate it further with you off the air. All right. Now let's jump even deeper into the religion file. Perhaps we will never make it out of the religion file this week. The ACLU is in the religion file. How does something like that happen? Well, here's how. Let's see. An instructor at a public community college in Fresno, an ACLU staff attorney says that this instructor in Fresno has been presenting his religious views on homosexuality, abortion, and global warming as fact to students. in an introductory health science class. Yeah, this ACLU attorney said at least two students at Fresno City College have complained that instructor Bradley Lopez quoted the Bible as proof that human life begins at conception and characterized homosexuality as a mental illness. Wow. That's an instructor at Fresno City College. Wow. The ACLU staff attorney sent a letter to the college president asking the school to, quote, act immediately to ensure that all its health classes provide only accurate and unbiased information. Accurate and unbiased. So this lesbian ACLU pervert lawyer, she doesn't realize that, 50 years ago, the idea that life began at conception and that homosexuality was a mental illness, that was accepted as accurate and unbiased. It's only become distorted here in the last generation or so as the hippies and the queers have, basically taken over the machinations of government and the educational institutions. One student who had Mr. Lopez as a teacher last semester said that his personal beliefs became apparent on the first day of class when he made a point of contradicting their textbook, which listed cancer as the leading cause of death. Lopez told the class that wasn't true. He said that abortion kills more people than cancer. Now, let's do the math on that. Abortion kills about 1.2 million in the United States per year. And I haven't looked up the cancer deaths, but my guess is abortion at the very least gives cancer a good run for its money, if not eclipsing it. We'll have to have our crack staff of researchers look into Mr. Lopez's math to make sure that he's presenting accurate and unbiased information there. Because cancer certainly does kill a lot of people, but abortion kills an awful lot of people as well. Let's see, what else did Mr. Lopez do to offend the freaks over at the ACLU? He also told the students that evolution is a dead theory and invited them to visit his office if you want, quote, if you want to know about your creator. Okay. So my advice to Mr. Lopez, what are you doing at the Fresno City College? I understand you need a paycheck, but, for crying out loud, get out of the university. Well, you're going to be forced out of the university. We won't have to worry about that, but think about starting a church, become a preacher of the gospel. It sounds like you have a pretty good grasp, at least on the fundamentals. And the fundamentals are extremely important, as we all know. Now, one more from the religion file. Now, I've been holding off on this, and I'm not sure I should do this, but I'm going to do it because I often do things without thinking through the full implications. But as we were concluding the personhood signature gathering phase over the past 2 weeks, it was intense. People working 10, 12, 16 hours a day. People working their regular jobs, getting off work, going out in the streets for 2, 4, 6 hours. Literally working until their bones ached. Working through illness. Working through family tribulations and troubles to get this done. And with no help from the larger religious, quote, quasi, whatever you want to call them, religious groups like Focus on the Family. Now, I reported last week in breaking news that, in fact, James Dobson and his lovely wife had signed the personhood petition, but they are no longer associated with Focus on the Family. Now, I've been holding this story for a week because there was a chance last week that insiders at Focus on the Family were going to allow Personhood Colorado to circulate the petition in the Focus on the Family campus, where we figured we could garner perhaps 500 signatures, because just about everyone who works at Focus would sign it. Well, those plans were shot down at the highest levels of power at Focus on the Family, and the personhood petition was not allowed to be circulated, so pro-life voters who work at Focus on the Family were robbed of their opportunity to sign the petition, and now I'm going to open up with both barrels on Focus on the Family. So, okay, here we go. Denver. This is from the Wall Street Journal. Focus on the Family, the Evangelical Radio Ministry. Did I say mystery? The Evangelical Radio Ministry that grew into a powerhouse of the religious right enters a new era this month as founder James Dobson steps down. Now, Dobson, who's 73 years old, will record his last daily broadcast of his radio show later on this month. And he's going to be completely out of the picture. Taking over for him will be one Jim Daly, an MBA, who's been with the ministry for 20 years. Now, you'll remember Mr. Dobson began the ministry advising parents, urging, for instance, according to the Wall Street Journal, a firm hand in child discipline, including spankings with a paddle. So that's where James Dobson comes from. Okay, so he came from solid ground, and he's done an awful lot of great things. Now, in contrast, Mr. Daly is an MBA who's been a parasite collecting a check from the ministry for approximately 2 decades, as best I can tell, and that's just my humble opinion. Mr. Daly says he isn't backing away from Mr. Dobson's conservative social agenda, but he has no use for the sharp personal attacks on politicians employed by Mr. Dobson. Mr. Daly says, quote, "I don't see evil behind everything." Now, he has praised, by the way, President Barack Hussein Obama for his devotion to family. And last summer, Mr. Daly, that is one Jim Daly, MBA, attended a White House event celebrating fatherhood. Those are the fathers whose children Barack Hussein Obama's policies failed to murder. That when I spoke earlier about that entire class of citizen that is being dehumanized and murdered, Barack Hussein Obama is one of the proponents of a society where an entire class of people can be dehumanized and murdered. And Jim Daly, MBA, parasite, on the Focus on the Family ministry, who has somehow taken it over like some kind of Borg, attended a dinner, a White House event, celebrating fatherhood with Barack Hussein Obama. Now, on abortion, what does Mr. Daly say? He says he wouldn't spend much energy fighting for a ban on abortion, though that remained his ultimate goal. Say again, Mr. Daly, you won't spend much energy fighting for a ban, but that remains your ultimate goal? So we have Jim Daly, a schizophrenic MBA. He says an abortion ban is his goal, but he won't spend much energy fighting for it. The ministry, by the way, Focus on the Family's political action budget is about $10 million per year. Now, I wonder how much energy Mr. Daly will spend ensuring that he brings in $10 million for their political action committee this year. I think I have a pretty good handle on where Mr. Daly's energy will be spent. It'll be spent collecting that $10 million. Now, just for the record, I personally ran into Mr. Daly at a pastor's prayer breakfast here in Denver, Colorado, where he was the keynote speaker. And I approached Mr. Daly and one of his flunkies, and I said, "Mr. Daly, will you sign the personhood petition? A person is a person no matter how small. Life begins at conception. Help us put it on the ballot." And he almost signed it, but then a little lawyer popped up on his shoulder in a devil's uniform, and also his flunky started tugging at his tie, saying, "We can't do that without asking Tom Minery. We can't sign that." And they literally handed the petition back to me and said, "We're very sorry. We'll be in touch." And they walked out the door. Having passed up their opportunity to stand up for an entire class of citizens who are being dehumanized and murdered, and basically thumbing their nose at the most significant social movement of their generation, while James Dobson rides off into the sunset, he signed the petition. Meanwhile, a schizophrenic MBA parasite, in my humble opinion, has taken over the reins at Focus on the Family.
It's all about
All right, so we'll leave Mr. Daly aside. Indeed, Mr. Daly. But we will welcome Mr. Daly and the Focus on the Family family, should they ever come. By the way, I had an opportunity after Mr. Daly snubbed me. He didn't snub me. He snubbed the will of God and the movement, the personhood movement. He snubbed the innocents that are being threatened with death. That's who he snubbed. I just happened to be the guy. I happened to be the fellow who he bumped into. I talked with one of his flunkies there. I forget her name. She's supposed to be somebody. She's related to some famous preacher. Anyway, she was backing and filling and shucking and diving and ducking. It was pathetic. She said, well, we want to see if it gets on the ballot before we take a stand on it. So, you know, anyway, all right, I'm going to leave it aside because it upsets me. And I'll just move on into the justice file as if that's going to help. Do we want to start in Fresno again? We're back in Fresno. We've got one guy in Fresno trying to tell people that homosexuality is a mental disorder and that they receive their rights from their creator. Meanwhile, the police in Fresno are at war. Yeah, I bet you didn't know there's a war going on in Fresno. Well, there is. Here we go. From the Associated Press, the Fresno police are engaged in a four-year tactical battle, a war, against a gang. They've been sweeping through neighborhoods and have made more than 12,000 arrests in the past 4 years. It's called Operation Bulldog. I mean, that sounds like some kind of operation that you'd send the Marines on. Operation Bulldog. Right? The bulldog and all. That fits. That would actually be an operation to prevent drunk young Marines from getting bulldogs tattooed on them. They used to have sweeps, in fact, in the tattoo parlors off the base there in Okinawa to make sure that everyone getting tattooed was, in fact, not intoxicated, which was generally not the case.
I thought that was a uniform.
No, it was not part of the uniform, in fact. It was not required. Now, I've gotten off track here, but Operation Bulldog is serious. It's going on in Fresno, and it's been going on for 4 years. And in the first 3 years, records show that violent crime has decreased in Fresno. So the police are somewhat encouraged that they've been at war with a gang. The gang is called the Bulldogs, by the way. They've been at war with this gang for 4 years, and they're happy that crime has decreased. In some cases by 15%, other crimes by 9%. Another type of violent crime is down 43%. Let's see, 26% fewer vehicles stolen. So they're reporting that their war is, you know, bearing some fruit. Now, in November of 2006, Fresno Police Chief Jerry Dyer, he went on TV announcing a 10-person Operation Bulldog tactical unit to make gang members' lives miserable. And I know that many of you in the audience think that it's the police's job to make the lives of criminals miserable, and that's how we prevent crime. We make it as difficult as it can be for criminals to perpetrate crimes against us. But folks, this is really losing sight of the true means by which we may ensure domestic tranquility. And it's not about making criminals' lives miserable and doing all we can to make it so criminals can't perpetrate crimes against us with sweeps and arrests and make their lives miserable, make it so they can't do it, right? No, it's about making it so they won't. And so what needs to happen is there needs to be a swift and public execution of the next couple of bulldogs who are convicted of capital crimes. They need to be publicly and painfully executed, and the bulldog war would end. The bulldogs would all scatter, and they'd become little poodles. They'd leave town. They'd stop, not because they can't, but because they'd be afraid. Gang members act like they're not afraid to die until you start killing a few of them, and you see their attitude change dramatically. Let's see, what does the police chief have to say? This poor guy. He says, we know the war on gangs can never be won. Okay, right there, chief, you're out of a job in my town. If I'm the mayor, if you say the war on gangs can never be won, you're fired. That's not the attitude we want. I prefer the attitude of failure is not an option, sir. The war on gangs must be won, and it must be won swiftly. But he says, this poor police chief, he says, we know the war on gangs can never be won, But we also know it can be lost. Yes, well, with that attitude, it shall be lost. So here in America, we tolerate a level of violence that is, well, in my book, it's intolerable. And here's a police chief who knows he can't win, and he keeps his job, and in fact, we think he's successful because crime has decreased. I want crime to be virtually obliterated. There should be no crime. You know, a few crimes a year, and they should shock the community, and the perpetrators should be dispatched with extreme prejudice. Anyway, so maybe I should apply for the job of police chief there in Fresno, because I think the war on gangs can be won, and I'll even show you how to do it. And I'll do it for less pay, I'm sure. Well, maybe not for less pay. No, I don't want to make any statements on that. All right. Now, on from the justice file into the fruit of the injustice, the domestic tranquility file, Las Vegas, Nevada, from the Associated Press. Police have yet to determine what drove a man to attack his bedridden sister-in-law with a medieval-style battle axe and then go on a rampage outside a Las Vegas home, hacking a four-month-old baby to death and critically wounding the child's mother. Harold Montague, who's the killer, he was captured, and he told investigators he didn't remember anything about the attack. He said he didn't know the woman or the boy he's accused of attacking. He claims he blacked out and doesn't remember anything. At which point, he should be introduced to a blackout, permanent blackout. He did admit smoking marijuana, but he didn't say whether he had taken other medications or alcohol before he took a medieval battle axe and killed at least two people, with others wounded. As police arrived on the scene, Montague emerged empty-handed from the house and began taunting officers with profanity and trying to wrestle a shotgun from the hands of one officer, at which point police shocked him with a taser. So here's a guy. I just don't get it. That's just disappointing. If there was ever a time when a Glock was necessary, it was right there. All right, on into the domestic tranquility file. The University of Alabama at Huntsville. You've heard of Amy Bishop. She apparently was refused tenure and shot and killed three other teachers and wounded two others. Turns out she shot and killed her own brother during an argument back in December of 1986. Yeah. She supposedly accidentally shot her 18-year-old brother, Seth, with a 12-gauge. Last Friday, Amy Bishop, professor, she presided over her regular anatomy and neurosciences class before going to an afternoon faculty meeting on the third floor and shooting five people. Strange. Strange times. Scary times. More from the domestic tranquility file, Des Moines, Iowa. A 12-year-old boy was charged last Friday with murder in a shooting that killed his stepfather and wounded a young girl. Did you catch that? He was charged with murder in a shooting that killed his stepfather. So it was the shooting that killed his stepfather. The 12-year-old boy just happened to be holding the gun and pulling the trigger. It was the shooting that killed his stepfather and wounded a young girl. But let's leave that aside. You already know my opinion of the writing habits of journalism graduates and employees at the Associated Press. When police arrived at the White farmhouse south of the small Iowa town, they found the body of Todd Peek, who's 37 years old. He was shot in his upper body. And 5-year-old Cheyenne Peek was also found in the home with a gunshot wound to the leg. The 12-year-old boy was later found about a half mile away and taken into custody. It was not immediately clear the 5-year-old girl's relation to the boy. Just ugly, ugly. Des Moines, Iowa, no domestic tranquility. Dateline Gresham, Oregon. An off-duty Clackamas County, Oregon sheriff's sergeant opened fire at a lounge, killing his wife and another woman before fatally shooting himself. A third woman was in critical condition as we went to press today. The shooting appears to be a domestic dispute. The killer, Jeffrey Gran, filed for divorce in August. The couple had been married for 17 years and had 4 children. Into the justice file now. Dateline Phoenix, Arizona. The oldest death row inmate in the United States has died at age 94. He died of natural causes. Viva Leroy Nash died late last Friday at the prison complex in Florence, Arizona. Research shows that Nash grew up in southern Utah and was sent to the federal prison in Leavenworth, Kansas in 1930 for armed robbery. He spent 25 years in prison for shooting a Connecticut police officer in 1977. In 1947. In 1977, Nash was sentenced to two consecutive life sentences for robbery and murder, but escaped in 82. 3 weeks later, he went into a coin shop in Phoenix and shot employee Gregory West to death, shot him three times and killed him. He was finally sentenced to death in 1983. 1983, I said. How long ago was that now? Is that almost 30 years ago that this maniac's been sitting on death row? It's just unbelievable. All right, now let's move into the culture file. The big story on the local news every day, every hour here in Colorado is dope dealers. Dope dealers are in the news every day, but they're not called dope dealers anymore. They're called medical marijuana growers and dispensers. So here in Denver, a medical marijuana lawyer named Rob Corey filed a complaint against the Drug Enforcement Administration. He filed it last week. He says that the Highlands Ranch, Colorado raid of a medical marijuana grower, we used to call them dope dealers. Anyway, this raid on a medical marijuana grower there in Highlands Ranch, he says it violated the DEA's new policy on enforcing drug laws in the 14 states that allow medical marijuana. Now, Denver DEA special agent in charge Jeffrey Sweeten says that the growing operation of this particular dope dealer posed a safety concern because it was near a school. Yeah. So how many other, that just begs the question, if you've got a medical dispensary and you've got someone who's supplying the medical dispensary, if you've got a medical facility, if you've got medicine, for crying out loud, how could anyone be upset about having a medical facility or medicine near a school? I am Doug McBurney, and no, I have no idea what he was just talking about in that song. Nobody knows, except the part where he says, got my head spinning round. That's, everybody sings along to that part, but nobody understands the rest of that.
Maybe if you smoke on it.
That's right. If you had some medical marijuana, you might be able to interpret the words. You might understand what's going on. Anyway, folks, marijuana is not medicine. And if the news media here in Denver, and maybe your local news, if you've got medical marijuana dispensaries there in your town, in your state, if they say it a million times, will they convince society that it is medicine? I believe, yes, they will. And, you know, eventually, you know, if you're having a hard time staying awake, you'll go down to the medical methamphetamine dispensary, you know? If you're planning a party, you'll go down to the medical cocaine dispensary. Yeah. And if you want to get depressed and listen to grunge, you'll go down to the medical heroin dispensary. And it'll all be medicine. It's a brainwashing that's going on. And like most people's drug careers, it all starts with marijuana, frankly. All right. Now, let's move on into the politics file as we are headed for home here on the Weekly Review. Dateline, Albany, New York. New York Governor David Paterson said last Tuesday that he would leave office only if the voters turned him out through the ballot. Paterson spoke to reporters after rumors have been swirling about him carousing in the governor's mansion. Now, he strongly denies any rumors that he was carousing. Now, Democrats have voiced their preference that Attorney General Andrew Cuomo run for governor once Paterson's term is up. They want him to step aside. Excuse me, Governor Paterson, can you do us a favor?
step aside for Mr. Cuomo. We'd hate to see anything happen to your health, if you know what I mean. Anyway, Patterson said, quote, "The only way I'm not going to be the governor next year is at the ballot box. And the only way that I will be leaving office before that is in a box." At which point Mr. Cuomo's assistants rose their eyebrows and they said, "Oh, really, Mr. Patterson? In a box? Is that what you say?" Anyway, there was an item in the New York Post last week, 2 weeks ago, that stated that Governor Patterson was caught by state police in a utility closet with a woman other than his wife. Now, Patterson denies it. The Post stands by its story. Patterson says that the mansion has no such closet. That's how he denies the story. There's not even that type of closet in here. Are you kidding me? All right. Now let's continue into the culture file from San Francisco. Directors of the agency that oversees the Golden Gate Bridge have moved a step closer to approving a suicide net under the historic span. The board voted to approve an environmental impact report that examines the consequence of hanging steel nets 20 feet below the Golden Gate Bridge on each side to prevent the nearly 25 people a year who jump to their deaths from the bridge. The bridge district says it'll need about $50 million to build the steel nets. And if it saves just one life, isn't it worth it? Anyway, I just find that fascinating that here in the greatest, freest country on the planet, we have to spend our money building nets to keep our psychos from jumping off bridges. It's just a sad commentary on the state of America post-Christian. All right. From the culture file, Dateline Tacoma Park, Maryland. Folks, if you have Kleenex, get them out now. You're going to need them. As back-to-back snowstorms shuttered schools for the week across the mid-Atlantic states, parents fretted about lost learning time. Administrators scheduled makeup days, and teachers posted assignments online. But the head of the food services for Montgomery County Public Schools worried about a more fundamental problem. How would students eat? How will they eat? That's right. Some kids, listen to this, get breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and bags of staple foods to take home for the weekend at their public school.
Where is this?
This is all over the country. This isn't just... Now, this is particularly Tacoma... No, this is not Haiti. This is Tacoma Park, Maryland. But you should read this. The District of Columbia, Philadelphia, Fairfax County, Virginia. I mean, it's all over the place. Anyway, so this lady, she's the head of food services for Montgomery County Public Schools. She's this weak-minded do-gooder socialist. What did she do while the schools were closed by the snowstorms? She arranged for Mana Food Center, a local food bank, to bring boxes of food last Friday to two still-closed elementary schools. Officials used the school district's automated phone system to notify parents of the distribution. It's as if without the government and without the public schools, some people would literally starve in the streets, and I believe that could very well be the case. I mean, that could be where we are. Here in this formerly great nation, the last great hope for freedom on the planet, we've got people, the snowstorm comes in, and without the public school, they're starving to death. Nationwide, listen to this, about 19 million students receive free or reduced price lunches on a typical school day. 19 million a day. The agriculture department runs a summer food program for when school's out, because, well, school's out, how are the kids going to eat? It's just sad. What else do we have? The director of school programs at the Washington-based Food Research Action Center, the FRAC, he said the demand for emergency food for families with children in the summertime goes up. Parents are more likely to skip meals so their kids can eat. Well, what's wrong with that? I mean, that sounds fairly chivalrous for a parent to skip a meal so his kid can eat. And if a parent does that often enough, eventually, one of them will get a job. But I I forget that most of these households only have one parent, and it's a woman.
Well, what they eat? I mean, what kind of food?
Government cheese. I don't know what they're eating.
Does Michelle Obama know about it?
I'm sure Michelle Obama is aware. In fact, I'm sure these are the programs over which she'll have the most control in formulating. No, and most of these kids, according to Michelle Obama, are fat. And the government's feeding them, for crying out loud. Talk about bizarre. I mean, talk about living in interesting times. Let's see here. So the headline from Personhood, this is from the Examiner, the Colorado Examiner, which is supposedly conservative libertarian rag. They say the fundamentalist pro-life movement aiming to ban abortion in Colorado by redefining a person is trying again, despite the fact that a similar measure was stricken in November 2008 by a 73-27 majority. In fact, Personhood Colorado is expanding the definition of a person. That's right. The Secretary of State still needs to verify the signatures, but we did turn in 79,917 signatures. And if we need more, we'll go get more. If the Secretary of State wants more, we'll get more. And we'll write them as clearly as we can for the governor, because from what we understand, he has an issue with his vision. All right. No more news about abortion. I'm not going to talk about Planned Parenthood because they disgust me. Let's see here. Oh, here's some good news on the war front. The Missile Defense Agency demonstrated the potential use of a directed energy weapon to defend against ballistic missiles. A short-range ballistic missile was launched from a mobile launch platform. Within seconds, the ALTB, which is the Airborne Laser Test Bed, used an onboard sensor to detect the missile, low laser energy to track it, and then fired its megawatt-class high-energy laser, heating the ballistic missile to critical structure failure and basically blowing it out of the sky. That's great news. We love to hear that. Let's see here. All right, less encouraging news from the war front. A single mother soldier who says she refused to deploy to Afghanistan because she had no family to take care of her young son will be discharged from the military instead of facing a court-martial. Now, the Army had evidence that this young lady had no intention on deploying. She says she was not exploiting her status as a single mom to get out of going to Afghanistan. This is just sad. I mean, what happened to the fresh-faced young American boy ready to go defend liberty and freedom and defeat the enemies of God and country? Now we have single moms getting themselves knocked up, basically, to avoid... Knocked up's not a good term to use. I'm sorry. You know what they do. Anyway, this patriotic young American woman is no longer in a relationship with the alleged father of her 13-month-old son. Well, that's just sad. Well, it's all alleged. I mean, how could we know? All right. I think that's about it. We're about... ClimateGate. The case is about closed. The academic at the center of ClimateGate says that he's had a lot of trouble keeping track of the information. He admits that he may have actually lost some of the relevant papers. He says his record keeping is, quote, not as good as it should be, unquote. Professor Phil Jones also conceded the possibility that the world was warmer in medieval times than now, suggesting that global warming may not be a man-made phenomenon. He also said that for the past 15 years, there has been no, quote, statistically significant warming, unquote. So case closed on global warming. And finally, speaking of case closed, how about the case closed on Great Britain? A devout Hindu, according to Reuters, has declared himself overjoyed after winning a court fight to be allowed to be cremated in Britain on an open-air funeral pyre. That's right. Devinder Ghai, a 71-year-old alleged spiritual healer, has been granted his wish to be burned on a funeral pyre by a court of appeal there in England. He believes that a funeral pyre is essential to, quote, a good death, unquote, and for the release of my spirit into the afterlife. Now, British law used to prohibit the burning of human remains anywhere outside a crematorium, but now, who knows? Anything goes. For the 560,000 Hindus living in Britain, I mean, there could be fires going up left and right. For crying out loud. Anyway, the 71-year-old spiritual healer, Devinder Ghai, he says, this case was truly a matter of life and death for me, and today's verdict has breathed new life into an old man's dreams to be burned on top of a big pile of You know, burned after I die. Anyway. So put a fork in Britain. They're pretty much done. That's the Weekly Worldview for this week. I'll be back with you next week. I want to thank KGOV, Denver Bible Church, Personage USA, American Right to Life, Colorado Right to Life, Personage Colorado, Theology Online, my other brother Darryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.